Welcome to Come What May by Serpent and Dahlia. And Our Flag Means Death fic, read by Little Fingies. This fic is rated teen and up audiences. No archive warnings apply. The relationship is Blackbeard Edward Teach and Steed Bonnet. Summary from the author. After a breakup, Steed comes over to his best buddy Ed's house for a movie night. Is tonight the night that Ed finally tells him how he feels? Maybe, but expect 9,000 words of panic attack first. Ed was having trouble focusing on the movie. To be fair, he'd seen this one, conservatively, 300 times, but that was because he fucking loved it. That wasn't the issue. Beside him on the couch, Steed wriggled deeper under his favorite of Ed's many throw blankets. He sniffled, nose red and twitchy like a very sad baby bunny. That was the issue. Ed loved this movie, but he could barely focus because something was wrong with his best friend slash the love of his life, and Ed was losing his mind trying to solve the mystery. Steed wasn't supposed to be there at all tonight, for starters. He was meant to be on a date, but at 7:41, Ed had gotten a call. Steed hadn't provided a lot of details on the phone. He'd sounded a bit damp and breathless to Ed's ear, trained as it was in all the various shifts and intonations of Steed Bonnet's vocal range. Like he was trying not to cry, or else he had been crying and he'd only just barely gotten it under control, and didn't that inspire a white-hot desire for violence? But Steed didn't volunteer any explanation, just said his date had been cut short and would Ed perhaps be interested in a movie night, if he wasn't already busy, and no worries at all if he was. That settled it. Ed was going to have to kill someone, wasn't he? Ed opened his door before Steed had a chance to ring the bell. He was standing on the front step, looking like a piece of paper someone had crumpled up and discarded, face somehow both pale and puffy red at the same time. His cute little date outfit, the ultra-soft lavender knit top Ed loved to borrow, paired with rich, mustard-yellow velvet trousers that made his flat ass look incredible, had gone all limp and rumpled. He looked up from his shoes and stared into Ed's soul with enormous, damp, doe eyes. "I don't want to talk about it," he said, lip wobbling. Ed wasn't strong enough to resist. He needed to hold the man. "Oh, babe." He pulled Steed into a tight hug right there on the stoop. "Come on, get inside. I've already got Moulin Rouge queued up." Which was how they'd gotten here. On screen, Satine descended from the rafters of the Moulin Rouge in her spangled bodysuit, singing in a low, jazzy tone about how Ed was aware that most people did not look at him and think, "Now there's a guy who loves Baz Luhrmann's magnum opus, Moulin Rouge, 2001, but he was a complicated and many-layered individual. Look, were the racial and or sexual politics great? Fuck no. Plus, there was the whole weird plotline fetishizing a totally whitewashed India, which was just... yikes. In Ed's defense, the first time he saw it, he was 24 and going through a miserable breakup with a rancid fuckboy that Ed had, mistakenly, believed was the one, until it became clear that the guy was only sleeping with Ed because his apartment was conveniently located near the bar where said asshole worked. Ed had been deep in the ice cream and weeping phase of that particular clusterfuck when he'd channel surfed into a cable airing of Moulin Rouge and, well, he'd pretty much imprinted on the thing like a baby goose. Several dozen viewings and 21 years later, he met Steed Bonnet. Ed had been at the farmer's market, searching for something unboring to use in that night's special at the restaurant when some kind of brawl broke out a few stalls down. Well, that wasn't boring. Ed was too curious not to go investigate, and he arrived on the scene just in time to watch a beautiful blonde man nearly catch a stray punch. The man dodged out of the way, tripped over his own feet, and, before he really knew what he was doing, Ed reached out to catch him. Which is how Ed ended up standing in the middle of the farmer's market with his arms full of a hazel-eyed Kiwi lunatic, caught in Ed's embrace like a Hollywood starlet. "Hi," the man said in a private sort of murmur, like the whole world around them had gone blurry and quiet for him too. He was grinning up at Ed like they'd been friends all their lives. Like he'd known before he even started falling that Ed, specifically, would be there to catch him. And just like that, Ed was in love. They'd been friends ever since. It turned out that Steed himself had basically been the cause of the fight. He'd been haggling over the price of cherry tomatoes. What a freak. And attempted to pit two vendors against each other, unintentionally reigniting some kind of generations-old blood feud the rival farmers thought they'd laid to rest. Ed was so smitten it hurt sometimes. Early on in their friendship, it came out that Steed had never actually seen Moulin Rouge, so of course Ed had to invite him over for a movie night. He spent the evening eagerly and not so covertly watching Steed's facial expressions out of the corner of his eye, filled with the thrilling anxiety of, please like this, please like this thing I like, please like me. Obviously, Steed loved it, because when were they not in sync about stuff that mattered? So then it went from being Ed's comfort movie to being their comfort movie. And that accounted for at least 100 or so of those 300-plus viewings, because, above all else, what Ed wanted Steed to feel around him was comfort. Well, that wasn't entirely true. Ed was madly in love with his cheerfully oblivious best friend, so, yeah, comfort, right up there at the top of his list, but he wouldn't say no to adoration or even just garden variety, insatiable lust. On screen, Satine and Christian were on top of the elephant. Satine, the courtesan, claimed that she couldn't fall in love. But already she was softening, lured in by Christian's irresistible earnestness. Without his permission, Ed's gaze drifted back towards Steed again. His attention was rapt on the screen, eyes wide and glossy and full of wonder in the reflected light. And he... fuck. He was mouthing the words along to the song. But just Christian's lines, the romantic hero, begging the girl to be brave and love him back. And like, look, part of the reason Ed loved this movie so much, long before he'd ever met Steed, was because Ed kinda sorta had a whole thing about over-identifying with Satine. Something about getting so lost in the performance, the mask, that you start to lose sight of the real human bits you still have left in your heart, maybe. Something about thinking you're not able to love, to be loved, only to get proven wrong in the most devastatingly romantic way possible. Or, you know, whatever. And Steed probably didn't even realize he was doing it, but the way he seamlessly stepped into the other role, like he was instinctively leaving space for Ed to take Nicole Kidman's lines, it fucked Ed up all over again. He was almost certainly seeing stuff he wanted to see, right? It would be nice to think that little gestures like this were some kind of sign that, deep down, Steed was secretly in love with him. Maybe so deep down that the guy didn't even realize it himself. In reality, the truth was clear. Steed just didn't see him that way. Well, maybe it was clear. It might be clear-ish. Ed had tried to make it clear. He'd flirted with Steed like crazy when they first met, to the point of feeling insane. Foolish. Because no matter how hard he hit, Steed never blinked. And Ed couldn't tell if it was some posh, ultra-polite form of refusal, so subtle that Ed couldn't even tell it was a refusal, or if Steed was really just that oblivious. And then, 4 fucking months into their friendship, talking almost every day, texting constantly, dropping in on each other at work with snacks from Roach's bakery, or invitations to wild bullshit like Jim's knife-throwing competition, 4 shitting months of being practically glued together at the hip. Steed dropped the bomb into their lunchtime conversation, casual as you please, that he had a wife. A wife! In point of fact, they'd been talking about Moulin Rouge. "I just can't believe you'd never seen it before, man," Ed said. "How is that even possible?" Steed shrugged and dabbed a bit of mayo from his mouth. Ed silently mourned losing the chance to lick it off him. "Mary hates Baz Luhrmann, and I just never got to seeing it on my own, I suppose." It took a second for this to compute in Ed's head. Ed had an impeccable memory, for certain things anyway. Sure, he'd forget any meeting Izzy tried to set up for him unless it was in his stupid work calendar. And yeah, he had to put an air tag in his jacket pocket because he'd left it behind one too many times. But he still remembered the name of his upstairs neighbor's dog from when he was 9, a smash-faced sweetheart of a pit bull named Felicity, and the phone number of the used car dealership he and his childhood bestmate Felix had liked to prank call, 1-424-206-9666. And the fact that gay deer traveled in herds together and were called velvet horns because the lack of male infighting left their antlers soft and fuzzy. Heard it on a podcast once and definitely didn't cry about it. If he was paying attention, information like that just stuck in his head like magnets. And with Steed, he was always paying attention. He remembered what Steed was wearing when they met, that bonkers cute shirt with the rosy maple moth print, and where they were the first time Ed cried in front of him, the picnic table on the bluff outside the ice cream and burger shack on the way back from the beach. He knew how Steed took his tea, dash of milk, 2 sugars, and that he had a frankly demonic affinity for banana-flavored candy but hated actual bananas. Which is why Ed was absolutely 100% positive that Steed had never, not once, uttered the name Mary in his presence. Certainly not as someone important enough to be a factor in what movies he had or hadn't seen. "Who's this Mary, then?" he asked. Steed paused, startled. The little fucker frowned like Ed was the weird one for not knowing. "You know, Mary. My wife?" For weeks after, every time Ed lay down to sleep, he'd hear those 5 words on loop in his head. "You know, Mary. My wife. Mary. My wife. Mary. My wife. My wife." So, Steed had a wife. And apparently, a wife that hated Baz Luhrmann? What kind of joyless snob was this person? Of course, Ed eventually met Mary, and she was fucking wonderful, so dry and take no prisoners with her wit that Ed couldn't help but love her and forgive her for her absolute shit taste in cinema, and for the fact that she'd fucked Steed before him. He was still a little sore about that one, to be honest, but he'd get over it one day, probably. Anyway, point is, something had briefly died inside him when Ed found out Steed was married. It had taken a minute to unpack those feelings. Disappointment, sure. Plenty of it. Anger, too, that Steed had kept it from him, whether it was intentional or not. Not even just because Ed had stupidly got his hopes up, but, well, it felt bad, thinking Steed was his best friend, only to find out he didn't know this huge piece of information about him. Except, the longer he sat with it, the more he realized that wasn't quite true, or not the whole truth. Maybe Ed had been kept in the dark about Mary, but it was only because Ed was Steed's safe space to be himself, his real self, the self he was still testing out, learning the shape of, the Steed he might have become if he hadn't been all but forced to marry a woman he didn't love, if he hadn't spent the last 47 years shouldering the suffocating twin weights of compulsory heterosexuality and his father's expectations. Which brought Ed to the final feeling, the biggest of them all, the one that underpinned everything, sadness. Brutal, aching sadness for his best friend, who was brilliant and amazing and a fucking one-of-a-kind lunatic, but trapped and drowning and still so far from finding the way out. So, Ed forced himself to take the news in stride, tortured himself with casual touches and quiet pining all through the last 2 years of Steed's marriage. When asked, he tried to offer advice that was neutral and supportive and might maybe nudge Steed in the right direction without just sitting him down, looking deep into those beautiful, unhinged hazel eyes and saying, "Babe, you know you're queer, right?" He nearly broke when Steed came to him for sex advice. "Ed, you're bi. I know you know these things." Ed had choked so hard on his Danish that he briefly considered letting someone call an ambulance, just to avoid the conversation. And the only reason he didn't go through with it was because he knew Steed would just ask again once Ed was out of the woods and breathing freely, like a maniac dog with a PCP-infused bone. What followed was the most excruciating 2 hours of Ed's life, and that included the time he'd gone to see Jack in an improv show. He was pretty sure he dissociated through the entire discussion, although Steed pulling up a YouTube video from an octogenarian sexpert with advice about getting your partner to squirt was, unfortunately, burned into his brain forever. And no one better fucking ask if he'd ever wink to the memory afterwards. Steed's voice so close in his ear as he'd held the phone between them, sharing his thoughts and questions about the technique on display. That was between him and God. When Mary asked for a divorce, Ed was the first person Steed told. He came out to him in the same conversation, and Ed was so thrilled, for himself, sure, but mostly for Steed, that he planted a kiss on him, right on the lips. A closed-mouth, smacking sort of kiss. Not sexy at all, but a kiss nonetheless. Ed had jerked back, eyes wide and already opening his mouth to apologize. But he'd paused when he caught sight of Steed's face, sporting the sort of stunned smile that was usually accompanied by cartoon birds flying around your head. "Wow," he breathed. Wow was right. For once, they were finally on the same fucking page. Ed thought. For all of 24 hours, he'd been elated. Fucking tap dancing on clouds. He ruffled Izzy's hair when he showed up at the restaurant the next morning, for Christ's sake. And then Steed swung by on his lunch break, practically mowing Izzy down as he steamrolled through the front door to Kraken and Waif, and Ed felt his whole body light up at the sight of him like a fucking neon sunrise over Times Square. He practically vaulted over the bar, already reaching for the man, ready to pull him into the sort of swoony kiss Hollywood could only dream of. And then Steed delivered the death blow. "Ed," he waved his phone in Ed's face. "I've decided to try gay online dating." Ed swore he skidded to a stop, brakes screeching. He blinked once, twice, played the sentence back in his head. "What?" he landed on. "I'm on the apps," Steed announced, clearly impressed himself with knowing what the apps were. He poked and prodded at the screen. "Here, look, wait, no, damn, swiped right, as if I'd date an orthodontist. Ah, there we go." Steed held his phone out to Ed, clearly expecting him to take it. Ed did not take it. The screen now displayed a Hinge profile for Steed, 49. In the top photo, he was tits out, sunbathing on a dock. Ed was going to kill Lucius. Ed had taken that photo last summer at the lake. It was one of his favorite pictures. Steed was propped up on his elbows, sunglasses on, shirt off, face and nipples tipped to the sun, golden hair perfectly air-dried after a bout of splash and tackle in the water that had left Ed dizzy and half-hard, a slight sunburn across his nose and shoulders, emphasizing all the places he was most biteable. Ed definitely didn't have the picture saved to a special folder on his phone or anything weird like that. "Ed?" Steed sounded suddenly uncertain. That was enough to snap Ed temporarily out of his red mist murder haze. Sorry, man. Yeah, looks great. So when did Lucius get this set up for you? Steed looked confused by the abrupt change in conversational direction, but shook it off. Last night, he chirped, enthusiasm rebounding in full force. After our... Here, he faltered. Kiss, Ed's mind supplied, unhopefully. After our conversation, Steed rallied, I had an epiphany, you see? That I don't want you and never will, so I'd better get out there and start meeting other people instead of spending every free minute hanging out with you, sad sack that you are, Ed's mind supplied, extra unhelpfully. Steed continued on. I realized I am definitely a homosexual, and so I'd better get a crack on exploring the wide world of gay romance. Well, wasn't that somehow fucking worse? And sex! Steed tacked on, because killing Ed wasn't enough. He needed to piss on the grave, too. I very much want to explore that as well, so after you left, I called Lucius and requested his assistance. Later, Ed would come to learn that Lucius had earnestly tried to intervene on his behalf. During their phone call, Steed had relayed the full story of the evening, including the funny feeling in his belly button that he got when Ed had planted a really, totally platonic kiss on him, and how that made Steed realize just how badly he wanted to find true gay love. Lucius had asked, tactfully at first, and then increasingly less so, what Ed thought about Steed dating other people. Steed hadn't understood the question. Ed had helped Steed get dressed for his first ever gay date, impeccably tailored jade velvet suit, midnight blue turtleneck, perfect hair, feeling so nauseous he could cry the entire time. He'd given Steed a pep talk on the way out the door. A pretty good one, too, even though most of his brain space had been occupied by intrusive thoughts about kissing, licking, or biting the man, all pretty for his date. He'd seen Steed into the car and then headed home, where he pretended to read the same page of a book for 2 hours before going to bed and staring at the ceiling for a couple more. He had to be at the restaurant for deliveries the next day at 5 a.m., but he couldn't stop tossing and turning and imagining all the ways Steed might fall in love at first sight with Anthony, 51. But Ed needn't have worried. Steed called him from the car on his way home for a debrief, and it wasn't a love match. He gave Ed a full play-by-play of the evening, including the handshake goodbye at the end, followed by a dramatic sigh. He was nice, Steed concluded, but his idea of a perfect day is fly fishing. Ed, fly fishing! With the waiters and the silly vests, and standing around freezing cold riverbeds at an ungodly hour of the morning? Honestly, fishing didn't sound so terrible to Ed, but he wasn't going to be the one to point that out. He rearranged his pillows on the bed to better prop himself up. Yeah? Tell me more, mate. All of Steed's subsequent dates followed much the same trajectory. He'd match with a guy, get his hopes up, and then, inevitably, call Ed on the way home. Ed loved these calls as much as he hated them. Or maybe it was the other way around. He could never decide. They always went the same. Steed would give him a complete rundown of the evening, punctuated with a sigh and followed by a string of devastatingly passive-aggressive notes on the man of the week. One guy chewed too emphatically. Not loudly or annoyingly, but emphatically. God, Ed loved this man. Another talked too much about himself, using Steed as a captive audience. Yet another asked Steed too many questions and offered nothing of himself in return, and wasn't that weird and vaguely suspicious? Ed lived for these comments, which made him feel kinda guilty, because Steed was clearly lonely and getting discouraged by his inability to find anyone second date worthy. But hey, Ed never claimed to be perfect, or even especially good. And Steed's snippy post-date commentaries were the only thing keeping the jealous monster that lived in Ed's chest from clawing its way out in a spew of blood and gore to claim Steed like a chew toy. And then came Roger. Roger, who was at least part of the reason why Steed was sitting on Ed's couch right now, looking decidedly teary-eyed as he watched the two leads laying in bed, giggling and kissing as they fell in love and wrote a very silly play together. Roger had been the most persistent of Steed's would-be suitors, and wasn't that fucking ridiculous? Suitors, like they were in an Austen novel or something. No question where Ed had picked up that particular turn of phrase. After his first date with the guy, Steed called Ed for their usual debrief. Ed spent the whole call chewing the inside of his cheek and waiting for that bitchy sigh, like usual. Only with Roger, the comments never came. Steed gave Ed the recap. They went to the aquarium, which, okay, that was a good move, Ed could admit, followed by dinner at some old-school surf and turf place, which Ed thought was uninspired, but Steed didn't seem to mind, and he only chuckled half-heartedly at Ed's honestly pretty clever shellfish pun, which, what the fuck? And then he sighed, only it sounded more wistful than disparaging, unless Ed was maybe, probably, totally imagining that? And then, nothing. Silence. So, Ed ventured, after what had to be the single longest pause in their entire friendship to date. Good date, then? Steed hesitated for 1 second, and Ed relaxed. He could tell from the little inhale that Steed was holding something back, and surely now he was going to lay into this Roger guy. The fuck kind of name was that, anyway? Steed blew out a breath and said, "Yes, I suppose it was. Good, that is. The date. Perfectly good." Ed narrowed his eyes at the phone, immediately suspicious. And sure, Steed couldn't see the face he was making, but Ed knew he could feel it. Steed swallowed audibly, confirming Ed's suspicions. But then he simply changed the subject. Started telling Ed about all the marvelous creatures he'd seen at the aquarium, and how he and Ed really must go back there together, which, oof, Ed's poor fucking heart. Steed didn't seem to realize what he was implying, or that, as he described in minute detail every exhibit and display he'd seen that afternoon, he somehow managed to avoid mentioning Roger's name again for the rest of the call. Maybe the date was really bad? So bad Steed didn't want to tell Ed? That possibility made Ed want to find this Roger character and partake in a good meme. But then, the next weekend, Ed casually asked Steed if he wanted to take a drive up the coast together on Saturday, since it was elephant seal migration season and all the pups would be out sunning their fat tube sock bodies on the beach. Steed's eyes lit up in that way that made Ed feel like he was melting, Wicked Witch of the West style. But Steed dimmed just as fast. He flushed to the roots of his hair and grimaced apologetically. "Oh, I'd love to, Ed. I can't this weekend, though. I have a date?" Shit. Ed shoved his hands in his pockets. "Oh, right. No big. Who is it this time?" Steed somehow flushed harder. "You remember Roger from last week? The aquarium?" Ed blinked. So the date was good then, at least good enough to warrant a second. This had never happened before. "Oh yeah," Ed muttered. "No worries. Except, well, Ed had really wanted to go together." "Could do Sunday, maybe." Steed frowned. "You and your mother make brunch together on Sundays. You can't skip that." It shouldn't make Ed's heart all fluttery like that, Steed knowing his schedule. They were friends. Best friends. Friends knew that type of shit about each other, right? Didn't mean anything. "I can reschedule," Ed offered. Steed frowned further, and Ed rushed to wave him off. "Supposed to get cold next weekend, mate. You think I want to risk missing the miracle of nature that is baby seals? I can see Mum anytime. Bit sick of her, if I'm honest." Steed gave him a wry eyebrow. "You could go without me on Saturday, you know. Take Fang, I bet he'd love that. Or Jim, even." Ed rolled his eyes. "You think I'd go without you? Get real, man. You'd pout about it for months. I'd never hear the end of it." and Steed had given him one of those impossibly soft, fond smiles. "You're right, I would." So they'd gone on Friday. Ed had to rearrange some shifts at K&W to make it happen, but he owned the fucking place. Wasn't that his right? And anyway, Izzy could shut up, just generally. Friday had been a better day to go, really. Middle of the workday, hardly anyone was there. Ed and Steed had really felt like they existed alone in the universe, them and a few hundred elephant seal yearlings. It had been nice. Romantic as hell. Steed still went on his date with Roger the next day. And another, the following weekend. 4 weeks after that, Steed referred to him as his boyfriend, and Ed subsequently spent the rest of the night lying on his living room floor and listening to a Spotify playlist helpfully titled Sad Girl Bops. Ed had met Roger, of course. He was Steed's best friend. Be a bit odd if he hadn't. Although, actually, it had taken a weird amount of time for Steed to arrange it. He'd seemed strangely reluctant for Ed to meet the guy at first, kept making plans and canceling, or Ed would suggest drinks, dinner, a movie night, and then there'd be some perfectly reasonable excuse as to why Roger couldn't make it. But Steed would love to meet up one-on-one, of course. But he had eventually met the guy, a couple months into their relationship. And, look, Ed tried to be normal about it. Really, he did. He'd shown up to the bar prepared to lie through his teeth that he liked the guy until he tricked himself into believing it. He might be head over heels, ass over tits in love with his best friend, but he wanted Steed to be happy. This was the man's first semi-serious queer relationship, and that was scary enough without Ed causing drama. He was there to play the supportive friend. That's it. And okay, sue him. He was still Ed, still a bitch. Obviously, he dressed up for the occasion. Just towing the line between intimidatingly sophisticated and intimidatingly slutty, including the black silk cravat he'd stolen from Steed, tied carefully, carelessly, so that it draped down from the very low neckline of his shirt. Anyway, he'd shown up ready to be amiable, affable, jovial. His first impression of the guy was boring, nondescript. Ed knew he was biased, what with the absolutely raging, out-of-control emotional boner he had for Steed, but he felt like this was a semi-objective or even charitable assessment. Roger was wearing khakis, for fuck's sake. So, okay, not as cool as Steed, but who was? Steed was basically a unicorn, a living miracle. Obviously, anyone else would seem drab by comparison. Didn't mean Roger couldn't be a perfectly nice guy. All night, Ed tried. He was decidedly not enjoying himself. Sitting across from the guy currently fucking the love of his life, and even worse, holding his hand on the table. But he forced himself to ask, boring, questions, and forced himself to listen to Roger's, boring, answers so he could ask follow-up questions about insurance adjusting, and his drought-resistant garden, and his turtle Marvin. And it was all worth it, because out of the corner of his eye, he could see Steed fucking beaming, looking back and forth between Ed and Roger like he couldn't believe how well this was going. But all the while, something kept rubbing Ed the wrong way. Still, he gritted his teeth against those nastier thoughts. Just jealousy, he told himself. Don't fuck this up for Steed. And then, at some point, after Roger had finally finished droning on about the book he was reading on World War II, yuck, Ed took the lull in the conversation as an opportunity to turn to Steed and ask, "Hey man, whatever happened with Gladys at the Rose Gardens?" Steed volunteered twice a week at the local botanical society, and he'd somehow become embroiled in the bitter rivalry between two elderly women, Gladys and Matilda. Ed was 100% positive they were secretly in love with each other, and Matilda realized it, but Gladys definitely didn't. Steed wasn't convinced. Steed lit up and immediately launched into a long-winded story about Matilda's latest shenanigans with Gladys's pruning shears. He was doing that thing that Ed loved, where he dove down every side road and tangent, A million threads all weaving together into an answer that probably didn't make sense to anyone but the people who adored Steed the very most, like Ed. And, he supposed, probably Roger, his boyfriend of 2+ months. Except, at some point, in the middle of a tangent about the naming conventions for IKEA furniture, Steed gesticulated so emphatically that he very nearly took out both his and Ed's drinks. Ed had chuckled and glanced at Roger, expecting to see him watching Steed with some version of the same fond, rapt amusement written all over Ed's own face. Only, Roger wasn't looking at Steed at all. Looking in his general direction, maybe, but his glazed eyes were fixed somewhere just beyond Steed's shoulder. He nodded along noncommittally as Steed wandered into a digression on the history of Japanese quilting traditions, but clearly he wasn't really listening. It was a look Ed was all too familiar with, and he never failed to find it as confusing as it was infuriating. For reasons surpassing all understanding, people seemed to find it hard to fully pay attention when Steed got going. He'd start in on a subject, and the other person would drift away to some other world, like Steed was speaking in the Charlie Brown teacher language or something. Ed simply could not comprehend it. He flexed his hand under the table, willing himself not to reach over and strangle the prick. It would embarrass Steed, probably, and he couldn't have that. But Steed had also picked up on the vibe. He faltered, trailing off with a nervous laugh. "Sorry," he winced. "You know better than to get me going, Ed. I'm sure you two don't want to hear about all this." Ed's whole body burned, white hot with rage. Look, he'd tried. Really, he didn't want to hate Steed's boyfriend, didn't want to be bitter and selfish, but he drew the line at someone making Steed self-conscious, making him shrink in on himself like that. That was unforgivable. "No way, mate." He took a big sip of his drink, smiling at Roger with cheerful murder in his eyes. "Keep going. I'm dying to know what Matilda thought about Gladys's granddaughter's baby shower." So, Ed didn't like Roger. Lots of people didn't like their best friend's significant other. Didn't give you license to be, like, weird about it. Still, Ed was torn. It had been one thing when he just hated the guy because he was jealous. It was a whole other fish entirely now that he knew just how wrong this schmuck was for Steed. Roger didn't appreciate him, no, revere him, like Steed deserved. And Ed, theoretically, knew that this just needed to be part of Steed's story. He was on his middle-aged baby gay journey. There was going to be some discomfort, some heartbreak along the way. But also, Steed had been trapped in a loveless sham of a cishet marriage since he was 23. What if he didn't realize it could be better? What if Roger came along, and Steed was like, "Welp, I'm moderately attracted to this beige man, and I've never cried after sex, so clearly, this is it. True romance. Time to start shopping for ethical, lab-grown Mawsonite engagement rings and picking out names for our rescue cat." As his best mate, didn't Ed have a responsibility, nay, a duty, to gently intervene? Ed was aware there might be a slight conflict of interest here, so he decided to do something he'd sworn to himself he would never do. Lucius squinted at him judgily over the top of his boba tea. Or maybe that was just how his face looked. He took a slurpy sip. "So, you hate Steed's new beau, and you're trying to decide if it's because he actually sucks, or if you're just so in love with the man that you might sabotage his first serious relationship in lieu of, say, having an adult conversation? Do I have that right?" Ed's face burned. He picked at a peely bit on the edge of the cafe table where they sat. "I don't know. I guess you're not, like, wrong. Completely." Lucius continued squinting and slurping. Ed was pretty sure. He hadn't exactly looked up to check, but he could feel it. When it became clear Lucius wasn't going to say anything else, Ed broke. "So, I mean, which one is it? Or whatever." "Babe, Lucius reached across the table and laid a gentle hand on Ed's wrist, stilling his very important work of peeling that loose bit of veneer. Ed risked a glance up at him. "It's both," Lucius informed him, not unkindly. "Of course it's both." So you agree he sucks?" Ed blew out a sigh of relief. Okay, I guess we're just going to blast right past the other half of that sentence without acknowledgement, but sure." Lucius took another sip of his drink. "Pretty much the whole crew thinks he's way too boring for Steed, and Jim says they actively get bad vibes from him, but they wouldn't explain why. Frankly, I think that's just their default opinion on all new people until proven otherwise, so take it with a grain of salt." "So, I should say something then?" Ed was feeling lighter already. Lucius gave him a pitying grimace that Ed really did not like at all. "No, you absolutely should not." Lucius went on to remind him of all the very smart and correct points that Ed's better angels had already made in his head. Coming out was a journey. Steed deserved the chance to figure things out on his own, etc., etc. Really, Ed could have skipped the whole conversation. He already knew all that shit. Should have just listened to himself and avoided the whole humiliating bit where he asked Lucius for advice. The boy was what, 15 years younger than him? Utter bullshit that he was smart and self-actualized and had 3+ partners who all thought the sun rose and set on his ass when Ed couldn't even find one. But still, Ed kept his mouth shut. Which was why, 3 months later, they were an hour into Ed's favorite movie and he'd barely taken in a single word. Steed had shown up at his house all distraught, and it was driving Ed nuts not knowing why. Like an itch between his shoulder blades that he couldn't quite reach. That had happened just last week, during a different movie night. Joe vs. the Volcano, one of Steed's favorites that Ed now loved too because it was just so Steed. Ed had squirmed and twisted in his seat until Steed, without being asked, had reached over absently, eyes still on the TV, and scratched Ed's back for him. Long, slow, deep scratches, just the way Ed liked it, until he was basically purring. He'd never wanted it to end, but just when there was becoming a real risk of embarrassing himself, Steed had said, "There now, isn't that better?" in his soft bedtime story voice, and another piece of Ed's heart had broken off and melted into goo in his chest. Ed's eyes kept flicking over to Steed, cuddled up on the other side of the couch. Steed had barely said a word since he'd come inside, but he'd smiled and laughed at all of his favorite parts of the movie, just like usual. Sighed at a few of the more romantic bits, same as he always did. A few times he caught Ed looking. Ed was not being subtle, but he only offered him a thin smile and turned back to the TV. What happened on that date? Was it just a fight? Or did he and Roger finally break up? Ed didn't want to push. Steed would say something when he was ready. As usual, they were perfectly in sync. "He dumped me," Steed announced halfway through the movie, finally answering Ed's unspoken question. Ed whipped around to stare at him. Steed's gaze stayed fixed on the screen, but there was a tension in his shoulder blades, and his mouth was a flat, determined line, like he'd been working himself up to this all night. "He dumped me." The little demon in Ed's heart pumped its fists, poured Gatorade over its head, shrieked in triumph, and Ed immediately felt like a real shit for it. This was Steed's first breakup from a real relationship that he actually wanted to be in. And Ed was his best friend. No matter how much Roger sucked, no matter how madly Ed was in love with him, none of that shit mattered more than holding Steed's hand through this. Ed took a deep breath, then picked up the remote and paused the movie. "Fuck, mate, I'm sorry," he said earnestly. What happened? If you want to talk about it, I mean. Don't have to." Steed hesitated, then shook his head. Doesn't matter. It's for the best, really. He looked down at his lap, picking at a loose thread on the blanket. He was quiet a while, chewing his lip thoughtfully. Ed waited. I'm not sure if love is meant for me. Steed said it so quietly, so softly, but Ed felt the words like a dagger to the gut. I think there's some missing piece, maybe. I thought it would feel different with a man, but there was just this disconnect between what I imagined romance would feel like and how I actually felt when I was with him. The thread pulled free of the blanket altogether, and Steed just stared at it in his hands. Steed, Ed choked out, utterly helpless. Because what could he say to that, really? It was fucking nonsense. There was no one on earth more romantic than Steed Bonnet. No one easier to love than Steed Bonnet, in Ed's humble and correct opinion. Steed, who had stayed at Ed's place for 2 weeks last September when Ed had the flu, showed up with soup and Sudafed and, inexplicably, the DVD box set of Gilmore Girls Season 3, complete with extra commentary and deleted scenes. Wouldn't leave no matter how many times Ed swore he was fine, that he could take care of himself. Steed, who took Ed to the pier to ride the Ferris wheel for his birthday, all because Ed had once mentioned offhand that he'd never been on one as a child and always wanted to. Steed, who didn't laugh when it turned out Ed was afraid of heights, only held his hand and distracted him by telling him stories about the local Seagull gang dynasty, complete with elaborate backstories and intricate world building, until they were safely back to land. Steed, who had seen Moulin Rouge with Ed at least 100 times, and still sighed at Satine and Christian's first kiss, every damn time, still sang along under his breath, wide-eyed and enraptured, still cried his eyes out at the end. Steed could say what he liked, pretend he was fine with it, really, that he didn't need romance. But you don't get so caught up in an epic love story like Moulin Rouge unless you're hoping that someday someone will sweep you off your feet, tell you they love you no matter what, come what may. Ed should know. Roger could tell, Steed continued. He knew my heart wasn't in it. Not really. Good of him to end things when I was too much of a coward. He looked at Ed finally, offered him a brave, wan smile, and that was just about all Ed could stand. Maybe this would all go up in flames, explode in his face, but Ed could not let one more single second go by allowing Steed to think he wasn't made for love. I love you, Ed blurted out, then immediately froze. All the air in the room froze with him, as did Steed, who appeared to have stopped breathing. Ed couldn't be sure. Maybe it just looked that way because he had stopped breathing. Another beat of silence followed as Steed blinked at him owlishly. Did you mean to say that? Steed asked finally, voice squeaky and anxious. Oh, shit. Up until this very moment, Ed really had no plans to tell Steed at all. Sure, he'd thought about it. He'd fantasized, imagined a million different scenarios, good, bad, and fatal. But they were just fantasies, daydreams. The friendship was too important, and Ed was too chicken shit, and that's all it was ever going to be. He hadn't planned to tell Steed, maybe ever, and he certainly hadn't planned to tell him like this. There should have been flowers, fireworks, meteor showers. Maybe a catchy but heartfelt musical number featuring a medley of classic love songs. Never mind that Ed couldn't fucking sing. Regardless, it definitely shouldn't have happened the same night that some prick named Roger had made Seed cry. Ed was supposed to be comforting him, and now he'd totally fucked it. Did you mean to say that? Ed could lie, pretend he'd meant it platonically. They'd said as much to each other before, with pats on the back and firm hugs. But there was something in the way that Steed was looking at him, something open and fragile and aching. And now that the words were finally out in the open, Ed couldn't bring himself to cheapen or diminish them. Ed? Steed's voice rose higher still, verging into panic. Ed had to say something. He'd been quiet too long. He took a deep breath, looked Steed clear in the eye, and answered his question honestly. No, I didn't mean to say it. Steed's face fell slightly, and Ed ruthlessly did not allow himself to hope. But, he continued, forcing himself steady, I do mean it. Steed stared at him, expression suddenly unreadable. Steed, who had perhaps the most emotive face on Earth, like a fucking human emoji, and now Ed couldn't tell what he was thinking? Well, that's... he started, frowning slightly. I mean, that's very kind of you to try to make me feel better, but... Actually, fuck this. Ed leaned over and kissed him. The angle was awkward. Steed's lips were completely motionless against Ed's, his entire body rigid. Shit. Fuck. Shitting dick fuck. Shit. Ed made to draw back, and then Steed just... he just sighed. That same soft, sweet, helpless sigh he always did during the movie, when Zatine and Christian kissed for the first time. Like he'd been waiting all his life for someone to kiss him like that. Steed sighed, and he kissed Ed back. And oh fuck, what a kiss. Steed made a little noise in the back of his throat, and Ed made a little noise in response, and before Ed could really think about it, he was swinging one leg over Steed to settle in his lap, twining his arms around Steed's neck, scooting in closer, closer. Steed's mouth was warm and wet and open against Ed's, silk against silk, and if Ed thought he was in love before, he was an idiot, because how could he have been, really, when he hadn't known what this would feel like? Steed's body solid beneath him, his breath hot and humid against Ed's stubble. A broad, heavy hand slipped underneath Ed's t-shirt to stroke down the length of his spine, including that one spot that always, without fail, made Ed moan like a whore. Tonight was no exception. This was really happening. Ed was in love with his best friend, and he was kissing his best friend, and his best friend was kissing him back. And whatever came next, nothing would ever be the same again, because Ed sure as fuck would never live a moment of his life without thinking about the precise mechanics and sensory wonders of this kiss. He was shivering, his heart was racing, and this was really, absolutely, definitely the best kiss of his entire life to date, and it was happening right now, right now, right fucking now. Suddenly, Ed felt panicked. Like he was missing something before it had even ended. The seconds kept ticking by, and he and Steed were still kissing, and just as Ed got comfortable with 1 second, felt ready to live forever inside the specific placement of Steed's lips, and his lips, and Steed's body, and his body in that exact moment, that second would pass and turn into the next, and he couldn't remember where Steed's lips had been just a second ago compared to where they were now. And this was important. He couldn't forget this because this was their first real kiss, and Ed's best kiss, and each second just kept unspooling one after the next like a kite string slipping through his fingers. Ed wrenched himself away with a gasp. Can we take this slow? He heard himself ask. With utter sincerity, what the fuck was wrong with him? Ed squeezed his eyes closed, forced himself to say, I love you. Been waiting for this a long time. Don't want to mess it up. Steed blinked up at him, looking more than a little kiss-wrecked. His hair was sticking out every which way, and he was breathing heavily, and his lips looked all pink and pouty and delicious. Yes, of course. He gave his head a shake, like a golden retriever with water in its ears. I mean, yes, of course. We can go as fast or as slow as you like. Tentatively, he reached up and brushed a strand of hair out of Ed's eyes, tucked it neatly behind his ear for him. Ed had a minor stroke about it. "Also," Steed continued, hand now cupping Ed's cheek, "just so you know, I'm in love with you too." Ed was not going to cry.
Cool. Good. Cool.
I want to be clear, so there's no risk of confusion. Ed was very confused about a great many things, but he didn't think there was any fixing that at this point.
Yeah, no. Good.
Cool, even. Steed twinkled up at him, all perfect, mischievous innocence.
Shut up,
Ed mumbled into Steed's palm, still trying not to cry. Steed loved him. What the fuck? Steed pursed his lips and frowned, like something had just occurred to him.
So, that time you kissed me?
Not at all platonic, Ed confirmed. He shrugged one shoulder. Thought we were going to date. Wanted to marry you. Have your babies. Steed snorted, like he thought Ed was joking. That was okay. He'd see. Steed smiled at him gently, unaware of what he was doing to Ed's poor heart.
Well, anyway, shall we just continue with the movie then?
Ed could only look at him, lost. Steed's expression was so hopeful, so sweet, like he really would be content to curl back up on the couch and watch this movie they'd already seen 70 dozen times. Maybe hold Ed's hand a bit. And Ed was just like, fuck it, you know? How much slower could they take things, really? Hadn't they waited long enough already? To find each other? To both be single? All those times, Ed had stretched out sideways on Steed's bed, watching him with hearts in his eyes and knots in his stomach as Steed got dressed to take someone else on a date. All those nights, Ed had spent pining, sick to his stomach, waiting for the phone to ring. Every night, they'd sat here on either end of this very couch, watching this very movie, when Ed had longed more than anything to close the distance between them, to curl into Steed's side, wrap his arm around his waist, feel Steed's fingers playing with his hair as they watch Moulin Rouge. To be so close to him that when Steed let out that precious sigh during the first kiss, Ed would feel it as a gust of warm air against his own cheek. To turn and kiss him then, just softly, so that he knew he was loved, more loved than any dumb character in any dumb movie ever had been. And like, not to be overdramatic, but what if Satine and Christian had taken things slow? They had so little time together in the end. Shit happens. Lives change. People die of consumption. Not Ed or Steed, probably, but they didn't know that for sure either. Steed picked the remote up off the couch and went to restart the movie. Ed grabbed it out of his hand. Steed gave him a curious look.
Ed?
Ed tossed the remote over his shoulder without looking. It hit the coffee table with a plastic clatter, followed by the sound of the batteries rolling across the wooden surface and onto the rug. Ed paid it no mind. Ed leaned in and kissed Steed again, picking up right where they'd left off, heated and decadent and aching. Steed made a noise against his mouth, half desperation, half confusion.
But... Not that I'm not loving this, but slow?
Forget that, Ed murmured, not breaking the kiss. Stupid idea. I want to see what happens next. Because this was Steed, his best friend. Ed trusted him, trusted them together. Come what may, he was all in.
Such a perfect place. Suddenly it moves with such a perfect grace. Suddenly my life doesn't seem such a waste. It all revolves around you.
One year later, Halloween. Ed leaned closer to the mirror, pouting his lips as he swiped on a bright, even smear of blood-red lipstick. He blotted and took a step back to get a good look at himself. Frankly, he looked incredible. Ed didn't want to know what Steed had paid John for the custom-sewn replica of Satine's red gown, but it was a work of art. He'd absolutely be finding an excuse to wear this baby again. Maybe Pete and Lucius's wedding? Probably wasn't a red ball gown kind of affair, but what did Ed care? The corseted bodice snatched him in just right at the waist, and the color made his skin look like it was glowing in fucking candlelight. At Steed's insistence, he'd decided against a wig, and he had to admit his boyfriend had been right. The cascade of silver curls looked especially pretty against red silk. The first time Steed had seen him in the dress, he'd walked into a wall, nearly got a concussion. Ed couldn't blame him. He looked so good, he'd fuck himself if he could. Ed fiddled with the straps, adjusting the placement so they showed off his collarbone just right, not to mention the hint of cleavage the corset had magicked up for him. Behind him in the mirror, Steed emerged from the closet, shrugging on his black tux jacket over a white shirt and red cummerbund. "Here, let me, babe." Ed crossed the room to help straighten his lapels. "We could have gone as something else, you know," Ed said as he smoothed down the front of Steed's jacket, pausing to pick a stray bit of lint from his shoulder. "Something prettier for you, I mean. Feel like you got the raw end of the deal, costume-wise." Steed's tux was a perfect match for Christian's outfit the night he meets Satine. The night they share their first kiss. He looked handsome as fuck, but at the end of the day it was just a black tux with red accents. Not half as elaborate as Steed's usual Halloween concoctions. Steed arched a brow, gave Ed a long, slow look from top to bottom that made the tips of Ed's ears feel hot. "Oh, yes. I'm truly suffering," he answered dryly. They'd been together for almost a year now. Ed's heart had no business being all fluttery like this. It was embarrassing as hell. Ed hoped it never stopped. "We could always skip the party," Ed dropped his voice suggestively. He was still running his hands over Steed's chest. His clothes didn't need any more fixing. Ed just liked the feel of him. Steed looked downright offended at the suggestion. "And deprive everyone else the chance to see you looking this stunning? Absolutely not. Besides," he leaned in closer, his lips grazed the shell of Ed's ear. "I know how slutty Archie's Halloween punch makes you feel. I've been looking forward to fucking you in this dress for quite some time, and I'm betting you can't make it past 11 before you drag me into the bathroom." Ed shivered, his eyes falling closed. "Jim will kill us," he whispered back. "But what a way to go." Steed kissed his cheek and drew back, grinning at Ed now. "In any case, we owe them for the Arbor Day incident. Shall we?" He offered Ed his arm. In the end, Steed lost the bet. At 10:53, he couldn't take it anymore, and he was the one dragging Ed off to the bathroom. Ed probably wouldn't be wearing that dress to the wedding after all. Not unless their dry cleaner could work some serious stain removal witchcraft, but Steed had been right about this at least. What a way to go. The end. Please head back to the archive to leave comments and kudos and nice words for Serpent and Dahlia for this story. And thank you to the author for letting me podfic this. I love this story. It makes me laugh. I love how petulant Ed is throughout it. It really is a delightful, delightful story. So thank you very much. And I will see you guys later.